Welcome to Owning the Future of Healthcare, a podcast from Health Catalyst, your leading provider of data and analytics technology and services to healthcare organizations.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare, a Health Catalyst podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Litwin, the voice of B2B. And folks, thanks so much for joining us on another live episode of the show. As we explore today's healthcare industry thought leadership, make sure that you're heading to our website, healthcatalyst.com. Again, healthcatalyst.com. For more information on the various touch points we're going to break down today, but also for some more Health Catalyst content, including episodes of this show, some podcasts, videos, articles, blogs, and more. You can also find more episodes of Owning the Future of Healthcare on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So just hit that subscribe button and you'll have a full catalog of audio versions of the episodes, and you'll also have notifications when we drop new ones. So on today's episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare, we're continuing conversations on the intersections of cutting-edge technology and its subsequent tech practices with the healthcare industry at large. And what we're wanting to do is get a state of the union on how data and data platforms are shaping care organizations, and more specifically, the operations, the network infrastructures, and the investments of said care organizations. With so many new and evolving legacy sources of data, from AI to EHRs to IoT sensor tech, organizations are being given more data than they really know what to do with. So what we're wanting to ask today is, how should a platform reflect this breadth of data and enable professionals to make good use of said data? And on top of that, which data types will be most prevalent for the care industry moving forward? So for insights today, we're joined by our two Health Catalyst thought leaders. I'm pleased to welcome Brian Hinton, Chief Technology Officer, and TJ Elbert, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Data, both with Health Catalyst. Brian, TJ, great to have y'all both on. How are you doing?
Thank you, Daniel. Doing great. Yeah.
Thanks, Daniel. Doing great.
Yeah, great to have you both on again, and looking forward to breaking this down. So let's go ahead and jump in. We've got several points to get through. First question for all is, how is the broader data platform landscape and its various changes, based on any COVID-related impacts over the last year and a half or any more general market trends, how are these aspects of that data landscape impacting healthcare and its already existing data touch points?
Yeah, great point, Daniel. You know, as I think about it, it's an exciting time in data platform, in the data platform landscape across any industry. There's been quite the revolution over the last, 10 years as many different industries have been disrupted by data, and the need for data as a differentiator in the industry, in whatever industry we're talking about, has just driven a wealth of investment and innovation there. That's changed the dynamics. We see historically the acquisition of data at high volumes and in large amounts has been difficult to manage with historical legacy data platform technologies. And so that's just been changing dramatically over the last 10 years, such that compute isn't the constraint that we're seeing now these days. That we have cloud native data platforms that are almost infinitely scalable, really, that companies can tap into and take advantage of. And with that, it's just changed the constraint that many organizations, as they deal with data, find. And that the change that comes is, now that we're not bounded by the technology infrastructure, it becomes a matter of governing and orchestrating kind of that multiplying amount of data across the business. And previously, that was something that individuals would orchestrate and manage on their own, and they would schedule it and govern it on their own. The volumes are growing to such a level today that that's just impossible. And that's certainly true in other industries. And it's now approaching, with all of the new data coming into healthcare that you talked about, it's now challenging us in healthcare as well. And so this concept of data orchestration as a foundational component in a data platform to help alleviate the constraints of managing and governing the data growth is a key innovation that we're seeing. And it's really early, in its early stages. Vendors and companies are still forming around this idea of, how do we solve this the right way? so that people can take advantage of the data that is coming their way these days.
And Brian, what I'd add to that is what we're seeing within healthcare specifically, and what we were seeing even prior to COVID, is that healthcare organizations, as we were making the shift from more of a fee-for-service model to a fee-for-value model, the need to get more and more data to get clear pictures on their patients and on what is actually impacting care and what is the true cost of delivering that care. They needed a wider and a more various sources of data to go do that. And with the pandemic and with COVID, it's just further accentuated the need for more data and clear pictures of what's actually going on, not just within the four walls of the hospital, but also out into the environment that the patients are living in day to day. And so as we need to get more and more of that data and a clearer picture of what's going on, as Brian mentioned, what's really going on within the data environment is actually enabling a lot of that. It's bringing more sources of data together, using data orchestration to manage all of that data so that you truly have data that's accessible and usable, rather than just having a whole bunch of unusable data crammed into a single data warehouse that you can't get at or drive value from.
TJ, building on that just a little bit too, you talked about COVID and some of the things that surfaced, certainly real-time data, and COVID surfaced a great need for that in the industry. And then the various data sources you start talking about, there's lots of structured data sources, there's lots of unstructured data sources in the term of clinical notes, clinical imaging, that are starting to come into play. And with that, that means that the data technology landscape for analytics to drive your business is also evolving and getting more complicated, frankly, which is another reason why we need that data orchestration technology to help manage it between the various data technologies that are in play to manage real-time data or unstructured data. You know, in the broader data industry, we have the concept of a lakehouse, where everybody really is going to have some kind of unstructured data store, data lake, if you will, as well as a relational database or EDW to store their discrete data. You're just going to find all of these, that hybrid having both is just commonplace. The real-time data also becomes super important to bring automation. As you bring real-time data in and process it, you just the human element delays that. And so you have to find ways to be more automated, which is a shift from how things have been historically in healthcare data and analytics.
Yeah, and Brian, as you mentioned, I think one of the key things in that too is starting to view data as a product and thinking about how you can drive that very immediate quick time to value on those known destinations that you want to get to, but then also allow yourself to explore and have tools that allow you to get very quickly to where you want to go in terms of value, but then also explore and have openness to how you got there. So, you know, if you want to know, like, what is my readmission rate? We need to be able to get you there very fast. But then when you want to go and look at the factors that might be contributing to that readmission rate, you need to be able to go and explore all the data you have at your fingertips and govern all that in a way that makes it accessible. And that's really what we're trying to do in our current approach, is drive very quick value for those known destinations and then allow you the tools and the orchestration to be able to explore all the variety of data sources that you have loaded into your data environment, to be able to go look at what are the other factors that might be contributing to this in a more ad hoc kind of way.
You know, another point that came to mind, TJ, as you were talking about that, is as we think about data as products and how do we make it available to people, you were describing the governance aspect of things. How are you sure that it's the right data that you're getting to the right people? And it's interesting because it introduces a new set of skill sets to most healthcare data organizations. We historically in healthcare have been pretty protective of our data for lots of privacy reasons, and makes a lot of sense. But following the trends that we see in the broader data landscape, governance is becoming less about control and more about democratization of data, enabling people with data with confidence. And that's a mindset shift for a lot of data managers in the healthcare space to think about enabling people to get at the data and have visibility into where the data is coming from and what that data looks like, so that they have confidence in using it to make decisions, whether that's in a clinical setting or in a healthcare business setting. It just super, super big shift in that governance mindset than we've had historically.
I'm going to jump in here. We've got a few technologies that I'd say are really propelling this access to and use of data forward. I mentioned a few of them. You know, EHRs obviously are basically a legacy part of the industry at this point. And then we also have AI, IoT sensor technology, and a few of the ones that I mentioned earlier. But I guess more broadly, I'm curious which cutting edge technologies both of you see introducing new data sets to care organizations, or, you know, I guess which of those are introducing the most important or most critical data, and how do you see this impacting some professional workflows in broader healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is you think about IoT in general, and that can mean device data, and whether it's, you know, kind of commercial grade devices or consumer grade devices. I think all of those are landing in that kind of broad IoT space of contributing data at a much more rapid speed to healthcare. And that one comes in conjunction with AI, because as you increase the velocity and volume of that data, making sense out of it it's not humanly computable. That's where we need the rigor that AI brings to it and the scale that AI brings to it to make sense and see the signal from the noise in that IoT data. So that there's a strong relationship between the adoptions of those two technologies. If you really want to get that IoT data, you have to have the AI component in it to really be effective. TJ, what else would you add?
No, I just echo what you said, Brian. I think it's the accessibility of the IoT data, the patient reported data, and being able to bring in as big of a complete of a picture that you can of the patient is critical to that. And Brian mentioned, you know, augmented intelligence and be able to use the machine learning to be able to clean that data and make it accessible and usable and governed is the key. You don't want to, with so much data being out there today, if you can't figure out how to govern that and make it actionable, it really limits the ability to do that. But with what we're able to do with ML and data governance, a lot of the tools that are being ingested there, it allows you to bring in that incredible breadth of data that you can get from IoT and that you can get from patient-reported data and apply that towards what you know about the patient from those traditional EHR sources, those claim sources, and just get a fuller, richer view of what's going on with the patient to be able to drive clinical outcomes forward.
You know, Daniel, one other thought that TJ reminded me of is we've long said it's interesting in healthcare. We know a decent amount about sick people. We almost know nothing about healthy people. So in terms of us understanding from the data the right way to care for people to keep them healthy, we are dealing actually with a little bit of scarcity of data. And so that greater sampling of data from a greater variety of sources will just fill out that picture better for us to understand what is a healthy patient look like, and how do we get people to be more healthy?
Mm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And Brian, to that point, I think it's also looking for what are those key indicators. You know, by the time they've gotten into the health system, those traditional data sources, they've already had those events that are going to drive it. So when you think about managing a population, it's what are those indicators that we can get out ahead of to be able to identify how do we identify people healthy, and then how do we identify people that are at risk of maybe events that would be unhealthy, and how do we get to them ahead of time?
Right. Another point I want to intersect in this broader, you know, impact of data and analytics at scale, changing workflows for healthcare organizations, also comes down to how it affects the operations of day-to-day professionals, whether that is on the, you know, back office side or the physicians and the RNs themselves. So how do you see care organizations today approach the continuous education that it takes to teach their professionals how to maximize this data use? Do you see that happening at scale? Do you see it happening well? What do you see happening? Go ahead and just give us an overview.
You want to hop on that one, Brian? Or?
Go for it. Yeah, take a shot at that one, TJ.
I think I would say in general, what we have done in healthcare, we've done very good at deriving insights into the data. We've done a very poor job of embedding that in the workflows in the way that the physicians and the clinicians need that. And then in addition, it's actually transforming your care model to take advantage of those use cases. I've seen organizations that do that well in parts, but as we think about using data, it's important that you don't think about trying to plug data into the existing care model. It's actually how can you use data to change the care model, and then how can you change the staffing models within that to actually take full advantage of that and keep everybody operating at their fullest capacity and at the top of their license. So when you think about physicians, it's how can you supplement them with MAs, and how can you get the right data in the hands of the MA to complete that picture of the patient? Where do you need to plug in the clinical expertise of a physician or a nurse practitioner to go do that. So it's not just about how do we acquire the data, how do we gather the insights, but how do we correctly plug that into the workflow and embed that in those tools that they're comfortable with so that they can take full advantage of that and not have physicians get overwhelmed with the breadth of information and decisions that they have to make today, but instead actually have that augment the work that they're doing to make them even more efficient and improve the care.
Yeah. And just to chime in here before you continue there, Brian, because I have a point there that I think I just want to use to continue to frame the conversation here. But Brian, you brought up using data as a product earlier. You know, I think data and having a clear vision of what its core use is essential for its, you know, for maximizing it and for actually making it an efficient and a valuable asset to healthcare organizations. And the reason I bring this up is because I think it also matters that we treat data as a tool and not really as another layer of, you know, who knows, of magic wand waving that's going to save the industry or of procedural just sort of under the hood additions that don't really impact physicians day in and day out. I think it's communicating that data as a tool and being very clear that it has to be human-centric in its design and its analysis, and then in you know, how that feeds into empowering the physician and the end user, the patient in this case, right? So with that in mind, is that the kind of mentality that you see winning out today when care organizations try to take a lot of data and then educate their physicians around it, when they treat it as a tool and make sure that it's human-centric in their educational approach? Yes, no, why or why not? What do you see?
I love the term you used, human-centric, there, Daniel. And I think to set the stage for my answer there, just if we look at EMRs and one of the problems that we have in the industry and, you know, physician burnout, which is often cited, we brought these data collection tools, which are a large portion of what EMRs are, cataloging the care that's provided. And we brought it to them and we said, catalog everything. And we made the clinician's jobs a lot about documenting things, and they spend all the time in front of the EMRs. That wasn't that human-centric view of things that I think you were talking about and looking for. When I think about it from a data and analytics perspective, historically, I don't think we've been very good at this either. We have a tendency to put a lot of reports out there, dashboards, you have to click around a lot. What insights am I finding? And this is where, as we take those data and analytics and we put it in the workflow where the clinician is, that's first. And then as we add to that, TJ used the term augmented intelligence, which we think is super important. It's not just the data, it's thinking about data as a product and the use cases, Daniel, like you highlighted, thinking about that and say, what decisions are they trying to make with data right here? And how do we make it as easy as possible for them to make that? Far too often, historically with data, we've made that hard, that humans have had to perceive that from the dashboards and reports in front of them. And so AI augmented, our version of our definition of AI, which is augmented intelligence here, becomes super important to take the data and present it to a clinician and make it very easy for them to say, aha, this is the insight that will drive the decision that I'm trying to make to help the patient in front of me or the population that I'm caring for. And so that human-centric thinking with data is vital to not overwhelm them like we did with the EMRs, frankly. And that would be the worst case scenario if we brought all of these data and analytics to bear and we just further added the physician burnout. That would be unfortunate.
Yeah, I think, Brian, the other thing too there is when you start thinking about data quality, it's how can we also use what we're seeing to actually inform improvements in how we go about documenting certain data points, how we go about keeping the physicians and the clinical caregivers within the workflow that they're comfortable with, rather than kicking them outside of that workflow with decision support. And that includes documentation. It also includes, you know, we've heard pop-up fatigue has been one of those things that we've dealt with forever in EMRs. But how do you actually get the insights in the way that they're being delivered at the point that they need to make the decision that they're trying to do for the best outcomes of the patient, rather than forcing them outside of that? Because typically with the way you get it in the EMR and the way you get these decisions embedded, you're outside of your workflow by the time you get that. And at that point, the patient's not even there to have that insight. We want to get it at the appropriate intervention, either pre-visit or it's during the visit or it's after the visit, but get the right information to the right person to make that actionable. And really with what we're trying to do with our embedded analytics and in the EMR is to do just that And then also what we're doing on the data quality is identify the opportunities of how you're entering the data. How can you better inform the workflows that are generating that data to identify those gaps to improve that point of care decision-making that the clinicians are doing?
Now to, I guess, get this to an even higher level, what would you say, you know, with all of this context in mind you've broken down for us, what would you say are the biggest barriers to healthcare taking advantage of these data sets? We've laid out some sort of general barriers, whether that's continued education, whether that's sort of a mismanagement of the data, you know, upon intake. But do you see any more specific ones that you can target and say, yes, this is a core barrier that's keeping us from taking advantage of these legacy data sets as well as new data sets, and then tie that into, you know, what does the solution look like?
Yeah, I think a couple. One, we're still in the early phase of taking this new technology for data and leveraging it across the technology industry. And as a result, the more refined baked solutions aren't easily there. And so in healthcare, one of the biggest barriers is, okay, since I can't just buy this, I have to go assemble it. And so I'm spending some of my limited dollars doing technology integration rather than dealing with healthcare specific solutions. It's just straight technology integration. And there's just only so many healthcare dollars to go around in a healthcare provider space to invest in expensive technology solution integration. And so having more coherent, consistent systems that take advantage of these new technologies will be super helpful for health systems to adopt it. There's many just simply almost can't afford it with the margins that they're dealing with in their business. That's one big barrier. The other is obviously skill sets across the labor market. It's just super tight in whatever industry you're in. And healthcare is going to struggle to get the people that know these technologies and to help them adopt them within their organizations. Big barrier, I think.
And I think in healthcare in particular, you know, it's always been data quality and governance are probably two of the biggest things that cause projects to fail. You've got technologies that support it, but the more that we can bring in, and I think this is universal across health systems, spend more of your time actually managing the data rather than actually doing performance improvement initiatives, because it just takes, to all those issues that Brian talked about, it takes a certain skill set, it takes a long time. You've got to go in and do that. And by the time you get the data in the hands of the people that can actually do the improvement, you've burned 80% of your resources doing that. So what we go back to kind of what are the technologies enabling today? With augmented intelligence and with some of the data orchestration tools, we're making data more accessible to reduce the amount of time that it takes just to curate data and get the data that you need to inform the decisions and the performance improvement initiatives you're trying to do. Those tools, we hope, can actually free up a greater percentage of the time to actually go do performance improvement and go actually improve care, which is what healthcare organizations actually want to be spending most of their time doing.
I don't think you can talk about barriers in healthcare data without just mentioning data interoperability. We've made strides in healthcare now with FHIR is a standard that's growing out there. But interoperability between data systems continues to be challenging. We certainly saw that in COVID. It was super challenging for data to be interoperable in a way that we could use it to manage something at the scale of a global or national pandemic. So still have a long ways to go in healthcare from an interoperability perspective to win with data.
So to that point, I've got a couple more questions here for you. Real quick, before we get into FHIR, which I do want to get your thoughts on, I know Health Catalyst is trying to use its data operating system to meet a lot of these challenges head on and provide a more cohesive and holistic way to ingress and then make sense of and apply data. So can you break that down for us? And I guess more succinctly, what is Health Catalyst trying to do with its DOS that differentiates it from other healthcare data solutions? And how do you think this reflects the needs you see in the industry today?
Yeah, so with the data operating system, one of the key things we're trying to do is we're trying to integrate those foundational transformative data technologies together, which is a gap in the industry, deliver it to the health systems in something that they can use in an open way. There are a variety of different solutions out there in the industry that accept the data from you and then they process it on the backside and they provide you some insights to it, but you have a limited ability as a health system to use that to improve, to touch it, getting this technology integrated together, giving it to the health systems in an open way that they take our data content, our technology integration, and then they create new data content on top of it. That's something that we really don't find anywhere else in the industry that unlocks the health system to be able to focus their people on solving healthcare data problems in a very open, transparent way.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that, Brian, is when you've got that data in there and you've got it curated and accessible like that, I think one of the big things that we're doing that differentiates us from others is, I think, one, we can deliver those insights faster than others, but two, the part that we do with the openness and transparency of the data is actually allows you to take what you know about that and then actually go and improve it. So it's one thing to know, you know, what your uncontrolled diabetic population rate is. It's a completely different thing to be able to explore that data and go in and actually say, okay, well, now here's what I need to go to improve that. So what percentage of these patients had a measurement during the year that's greater than 9? What percentage of these patients just didn't have one, period? What percentage of these patients have had multiple readings during the year that are fluctuating around the line? Like, you know, trying to actually do some of those performance improvement things like fishbone diagrams and go determine what are the drivers of this particular metric, that requires you to be able to interact with the data and have a governed experience to go do that. It's not about just delivering a metric out of context. It's about giving you that metric and then allowing you to go explore it and figure out how you actually improve. And that's, I think, one of the things that we do that's quite a bit different than others in the market.
All right. Last question I've got for you here before we wrap up our episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare. But Brian, you brought up FHIR earlier, again, FHIR. That's Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources. Just for a little context for our audience, in case that isn't familiar, this is a standard for describing data formats and creating a more seamless exchanging of EHRs. This was developed by Health Level 7 and was first published in its first draft in February of 2014. So, you know, over the course of the last, I'm doing some mental math now, I guess 7 to 8 years, how has FHIR changed the way that data is acquired and exchanged? And is there anything we can learn there about what does work and what doesn't work about managing this sort of mass intake of data for healthcare?
Yeah, I think FHIR, what we've seen is the alignment that we've seen between interoperability standards, clinical decision support standards, and quality measurement standards is a huge leap forward relative to where we were at maybe, you know, 8 to 10 years ago when we talked about QRDA and HQMF and all those other standards that were out there. What we've seen with that is it's a great leap forward. It's still not quite far enough. And so what we're seeing in that is that while folks want to use FHIR, we're still having to fall back to a lot more of those traditional methods of how you do data interchange. So HL7B2 is still a lot more standard. Direct database access is still a lot more standard. CSV file interchange is still a lot more standard, simply because of those things that we talked about earlier, that the governance and the data quality is not quite there yet. So the data, while they've conformed the format and the structure on the data, the meaning behind it and the workflows that are generating that data is still not standard. So you're still seeing a lot of local codes coming out that don't mean anything. So I'm not getting all my link codes. I'm not getting all my SNOMED codes to normalize that data and have it mean something beyond that specific local environment that you're working in. I think one of the approaches that we've taken at Health Catalyst that's unique in this is what we want to be able to do, though, is take that data, enrich it, and then share it out to allow you to leverage what I think FHIR really has done is created a number of tools and devices that allow you to use FHIR to drive additional insights. So what we can do is actually bring that data in, enrich it, and then allow you to leverage more of those tools that are built on FHIR to get that holistic picture of the patient.
Thank you to everyone for joining us on this episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you to both Brian and TJ for giving us a breakdown here of how we're seeing data at scale impact healthcare. You know, obviously taking it in, making sense of it, and then turning it into actionable insights is a major challenge. And hopefully with some of the insights you got on today's episode, you can better understand some of the touch points where those barriers exist. And then by identifying the barriers, hopefully crafting some solutions to get around them and then make maximized use of said data. So thank you again to Brian Hinton, Chief Technology Officer, and TJ Albert, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Data with Health Catalyst. And TJ, we'll cut it back over to you here real quick. If folks want to find out more about what Health Catalyst is doing in this space to support the acquisition and the use of data at scale in healthcare, how can they get in touch?
So by all means, you can go to healthcatalyst.com, reach out there. They can contact us through that. You can also contact myself or Brian, contact at least me through TJ Albert at healthcatalyst.com. So thanks, Dan.
Thank you, TJ. Real pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for watching another episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare, a Health Catalyst podcast. If you like what you heard and saw and want to get some previous episodes, make sure that you're heading to our website, healthcatalyst.com, and subscribing to Owning the Future of Healthcare on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so you don't miss any future conversations. I'm your host, Daniel Litwin. We'll catch you on the very next episode of Owning the Future of Healthcare.